website this week that the country needs a truth commission. What exactly would a truth commission be?
So I think part of what we're seeing now is because we haven't really done the reckoning with the racial injustice and white supremacy of our past that we need to do. And so, you know, a truth commission, a lot of people will think of South Africa. We've used them in countries around the world. And basically what it is it's communities all the way up to the national level having conversations about both the gory and the glory of our history and what happened both throughout the history of our country and leading up to and on January 6th so that we can come to a common narrative moving forward of what we want our country to be.
Do you think the House and Senate leadership have the stomach for that?
I think so. Look, we all were victims of this attack in addition to being the lawmakers of this country. And I know for a lot of us, this is very personal. We threats to our lives, threats to our homes and our families. And so I think that there are a lot of us who know that this impeachment trial was just the start of holding Donald Trump accountable, but that we need to make sure that we're doing accountability of anyone who incited, encouraged, or committed acts of violence. And then really looking forward at kinds of things like truth commissions, like democracy, like institution building that we know are going to be the real fixes to what we've seen in this country.
Welcome back, Little Joe's Conservative Corner. That was Brian Stelter, and he had on Representative Sarah Jacobs, CNN Sunday, talking about a truth commission. I cannot begin to explain to you how dangerous that would be. Everybody's always talking about 1984, and if you've ever read the book, they have the Ministry of Truth in there. Pretty similar to what they're talking about. You get a group of people together to decide what is the actual truth, and anything else is erased and sent down the memory hole. So going forward, they can continuously erase the past. That's at least how it goes in the book. It looks like a few of the more radical Democrats took a page out of that book, and they're trying to make that a reality today. Hopefully, that will never happen. We definitely need to fight against that at all costs. And I think one of the best ways to combat that is having open dialogue with people across the aisle. We have to learn to talk to each other again, and we have to stop listening to the news. Sorry to say that, but your big news outlets like CNN, like MSNBC, CBS, Fox News, there are some people there that still try to tell the truth. A lot of it is propaganda. A lot of it is lies. Okay, New York Times, for example, they put out an article on the Capitol police officer that was killed saying he was killed by Trump supporters with a fire extinguisher, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there's always a little bit of truth in everything they say. The rest of it is either opinion or just pure propaganda, one or the other. Okay, yes, there was a Capitol police officer. Yes, he did die. Everything else in that article was either opinion or propaganda. They actually ended up printing a retraction to take it back once the true evidence and facts came out. So if you ended up reading that story and believing it, now you know that what you believed was purely a lie. Okay, that is a problem, that you can't trust these institutions. You don't need a truth commission. What you need are people held accountable for printing anything without hardcore fact. And it's not that hard to do to find out facts. You don't always have to be first, but you should always be right. And one way we can combat this is talking to each other. It's hard for liberals and conservatives and libertarians. It's hard for all of us to talk to each other. Everybody has their view. Most people, it's hard to sway them from their view. But at least if you can have a peaceful conversation, you can begin to expose lies to each other. Because what I hear on my side, you're going to hear something different on your side. And somewhere in the middle lies the actual truth, which is the way it's always been done. And hopefully we can get back to that. Today will be the first time I have a guest on my show. It's Nick Jamel. He is the host of the podcast, Conversations of Our Generation. He also has a website. And reaching across the aisle and conversations is something he seems to have a pretty good niche on. So here he is.
Yeah, we're talking with Nick Jamel today, host of Conversation of Our Generation podcast. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm doing good, Joe. How are you doing?
good, man. Another, it's warm in here in Florida. I'm sure it's pretty cold where you're at. So,
yeah, I was fighting my husky for like 25 minutes to try to get him to come inside. He's loving the snow that we're getting right now, and so I had to bait him in with peanut butter.
There you go. Well, hey, at least someone's enjoying it. Most people are hiding from it. I was going over some articles, and I think a big problem that we're having today is conversations reaching across the aisle, no matter what your political affiliation is, libertarian, conservative, liberal, and some maybe tips on how to do that and when to know and not to know how to approach somebody, you know, having a political conversation. You want to give us a little insight on that?
For sure. I think one of the biggest things to remember is that you're talking to a person on the other end. And so it's very easy in the world of Twitter and Facebook to forget that that's not just an avatar, that there is another person on the other side of it that you're talking to a lot of times. Right. And so finding a way to understand them first and not just throw talk, because the fact of the matter is we've all heard each other's talking points, whether you're a liberal trying to convince a conservative or a conservative trying to convince a liberal or a libertarian screaming in the corner, like most of us are, right? To get anyone to hear you. you know, it's, you're always kind of hearing the same talking points. And instead of doing that, trying to understand the other person, get what they actually believe, because so many times you'll start to unpack what someone thinks. They'll say, I'm pro-life, I'm pro-choice, whatever it is, you know, and you realize, oh, we are talking about this term, but we mean very different things by it. So really trying to take the conversation to a deeper level, understanding each other's terms that they're using and what they mean by it, and understanding what the person actually believes, probing, asking questions, and trying to understand them and empathize with their position, because that's what's going to open up and make someone trust you. You're not going to listen to someone. You're not going to take someone's advice if you don't trust them. And if you want to have a good, productive conversation, you need to have trust on both sides of that conversation that you have the other's best interest in mind, right? You can't go into a marriage. You can't do the dirty dancing, like jump and catch somebody, right? If you don't trust that other person's going to catch you. And that's kind of how I think we have to approach conversations with people who we disagree with, most especially, that I'm not trying to win points or score points on you. I'm trying to understand you and learn from you and maybe offer something of value to you, maybe a different perspective in a way that's not going to offend your sensibilities as much as possible. I mean, obviously, you can't control what someone's offended by, but you can at least control the way you put something forward. And I think that that's the big thing. I know I threw a lot of different pieces out there, but I think that trying to earn trust and understand the other person is step one. If you can't do that, then you're not going to have productive conversations for the most part.
All right, yeah, and I agree with everything you said, and I'm going to play devil's advocate with you a little bit. Since the news media seems very, I don't know, eager to divide us, let's say, how would you approach somebody who is really almost indoctrinated one way versus the other and tend to have almost an angry way about them? So when you want to approach them having a political conversation, immediately they're on the defense. Do you have any tips that you think would make sense to try to calm the situation immediately, let's say, to where you can actually have some open dialogue where they would absorb some of what you're saying and could express some of their frustrations? You know, keep in mind that they're thinking you're paying attention and that you are paying attention and trying to give them some reasonable feedback one way or the other.
I think that being honest and saying out upfront, hey, I'm not trying to attack your beliefs. I'm trying to share what I think and I want to understand what you think. That is a much better way to approach a conversation, especially with someone who's a little bit on guard, right? A lot of times when people get upset in a discussion or anything like that, it's because you don't want to be wrong about things and you don't want people attacking your beliefs. I mean, if someone came at you and you're, you know, for me, I'm a Catholic. If someone came and was just haranguing at the Catholic Church, it makes my blood boil when they're saying some of the things that I know are false about it, that I know are false and attacking on false premises. You know, it makes me angry, and you might want to just fire off with all the things. But instead, if someone came and said, hey, here's a thing that I don't understand, you know, if X and Y is true, then why do Catholics believe this? Or why do Catholics do this? Now I'm able to have a conversation with you. And so I think that, again, like you're treating someone like a person and respecting them, you're not going to come at them and say, here's why all liberals are stupid and are wrong about things. You might think that, but I wouldn't recommend it if you're trying to have a discussion with someone from that point of view. But if you say, hey, you know, I think that liberals, you know, I'm a conservative. I think liberals want the best for people generally. I think that there are some who might, you know, in the political realm of conservatives and liberals who are very cynical, right? Especially in Washington, D.C. or activists. I think there's plenty of cynical people on both sides. But I'm talking like your run-of-the-mill person. I think that most liberals want to do good by people. I'm trying to understand what you think. And I think that approaching it from that angle is a lot better. And then if people aren't going to do that, talk something else. You know, hey, you know what? Let's debate whether or not the Beatles are the greatest band ever. And debate something that doesn't matter.
Move on.
Yeah, let's talk that. Let's talk music. Let's talk football. Let's talk something else. Or, you know, if it's someone who you're interacting with on Twitter, just be like, all right, I'm done with this. There's a lot of, especially if you're on social media, I think just like walking away from bad conversations is something I've learned very much to do. I try to prod people and engage with people as best I can. But when it's just hard to follow or angry, I'm just like, okay, I'm not doing this I don't need to be in my phone angry on Twitter right now. That's not the place to be.
Right. Well, it's not good for you. It's not good for them. It's just more frustration than anything, and it doesn't actually solve any problems.
Exactly.
Now, a fun part of the question is, do you have a good example of maybe a conversation that you've had recently that either went sour or went really good when you approached somebody who, say, doesn't share your political stance, and how did it end up going?
Yeah, I actually had two great conversations last week on Twitter, funny enough. It's not normally a place where you find great conversations. But
that's true.
But no, I actually do a weekly digest of like top discussions, great podcasts that I hear and stuff. So that's I do a newsletter and I email that out, but I post it on my blog as well. And two of them, I had one where I said, you can have true religion or you can have false religion, but you won't have no religion. And someone kind of chimed in with an interesting point about the difference between religion and dogma and if you need organized religion. And it was a really good conversation. I think we started off talking past each other and then kind of figured out what each other's terms were. And so it was very interesting at that point. And I think we kind of said, all right, we're not going to convince each other here in 240 characters at a time, or 280, whatever it is now. And at the same time, we enjoyed having the discussion. It didn't get angry or sour. It was thoughtful. And so I think that was a good one. And then there's another person, Nathaniel R, his at Classical Con on Twitter, I think is his at the Classical Con maybe. And he is a big conservative guy who's kind of Hamiltonian conservative. And I'm much more of a Jeffersonian guy. So we have that debate a lot. And he was talking about how you need the central government to solve these problems. And I was pointing out places where I think that if you had left it up to the states, we would have maybe not solved this as a nation, but things like slavery and abortion may have been a lot less violent and vile discussions if we left it to a more local solution rather than a nationalized solution. And so we had that discussion and it was pretty good. Again, I think he and I talk in circles on things a little bit because we have a little bit different values on we probably are having the same kinds of discussions that Jefferson and Hamilton had at much lower level.
Right.
Either of us are nearly as smart as those guys, but very similar approach to the problems.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and you know what? A lot of times it's like that. I got people that they're very calm liberals and I'm conservative and we tend to talk past each other, but we definitely do it in a very calm and polite way. I'm very big on as soon as you raise your voice and the argument starts getting out of hand, you know, I walk away from it because there's some people that they see it their way, you see it your way, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's no in between. You just can't seem to bridge the two at any place. And I think a big problem we're having in society today is we're losing that commonality, that there has to be somewhere where we have some common ground. Mm-hmm. And we got to bring these conversations back to the table with people that share different opinions than us, and find that there is some common ground between everybody. Ultimately, you just got to figure out what it is. And I think once we start seeing each other as human again, these conversations get a little easier and a little easier.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I think that finding a way to just agree to disagree and know that when we disagree, it doesn't mean that I'm losing, or when we, you know, or when we walk away from our argument that we're not thinking I won or I lost is a big thing. And I think that the way our national politics are, we're so focused on cramming things down from the top. Like, I shouldn't have to debate someone about the merits of something that should be left up to my state. If you're in California, then go talk to people in California about how your state should be run and stop telling Indiana how we should run our state and vice versa. And I think that if we could kind of get back to a little bit more of that and a more localized politics, I think part of the reason why so many things are so vitriolic is because we're having this national debate instead of having a local debate with our neighbors. And because the people who, the liberals that live next door to my parents growing up, right, they could have those kinds of conversations, and voices might get raised here and there, especially when after a couple beverages, right? And you might lose your cool a bit, but you could always say, okay, let's get away from this. Let's go back to listening to music. Let's go back to talking about whatever we were before. And you can kind of live to fight another day sort of thing. And it's not just
it's more of a friendly debate.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's with people who they disagree with vehemently on very major things too. But you're able to see them as a person in the end of it. You're not looking at them as someone three states away who you're never going to meet. You're looking at it as the person next door who you might need to borrow a flower from tomorrow. And if that's the person you're debating, I think it's a lot easier to remember what the end goal of this is. And that's not to win. It's to have a discussion and maintain a friendship with somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you have to reach across to all sides. As tough as it is, and I've said it on my podcast multiple times, and it is tough to find anybody to have a calm conversation with these days, because America has become extremely toxic and very, very politically divided. But when you do, it's always good to sit down and have a real conversation with those people, because you do need to see it from their point of view. It doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but you definitely need to see it. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have another question for you. You do a lot of book review. Have you had a chance to read the book 1984?
I read it in high school. So I high school read it. I know the story of it because I read and spark noted a little bit to get it, because you know, I was a high school kid.
Yeah. Just running through it like, okay. There was an article out Sunday where they were calling for truth Caesars, people that decide, committees that will decide what the truth is. And I think this kind of goes in line with talking points, because if you have a committee of people deciding what truth is, it ends up shutting down what people believe. And once you silence somebody's voice, I don't see things getting better. I would see them getting a whole lot worse. I'm just curious, because I did speak about that a little bit on my opening. Do you have any thoughts on that as well?
Yeah. What I think that having the government or having some council that is, you know, the arbiter of truth is incredibly dangerous. The reason why we have a freedom of speech is because we've tried that sort of thing in the past. England and other countries have said, here's what's allowable and here's what's not. And here's who in the government you can criticize, and here's who you can't criticize. And that's not turned out well. It's been a way for tyranny to set in, and it's always been bad for the people. And so I think that that's one thing. But the other thing that concerns me the most about those sorts of things is that they can change their minds. We've seen this with the COVID pandemic, that science can say one thing and then another thing tomorrow, and you always just have to follow the science, and it's always right, even when it contradicts itself. And that, to me, is the scariest issue, when it's like, I saw someone post a meme that's like, here's the latest CDC guidelines. And it's like, don't wear masks because they said that at the beginning of the pandemic. And it's like, you can go back and at least record these things. But the problem with what happens in 1984 is not that they try to get them to say 2 + 2 = 5. It's 2 + 2 is whatever the party says it is. It's always a mechanism for power. And that's what I see that is so dangerous, is that the goalposts keep moving to whatever is convenient for the same people to keep power at the moment. The tech oligarchs that we have, the people in Washington, D.C., your New York Times and the mainstream media, those people are constantly moving the goalposts for whatever is expedient for them at the time to have more control or maintain their control. And they only throw people away when they're, you know, we've seen this with the Lincoln Project and some sudden questions all that just sprung up from, you know, 8 months ago about Cuomo's handling of the pandemic, that now these truth councils that were saying everything's fine 9 months ago with the Lincoln Project and Cuomo, now all of a sudden those problems that were there are being exposed because they're no longer necessary for what the left wants. And I think that's what bothers me the most and concerns me the most, because I think there are a lot of good-hearted people who don't notice that, or who just don't pay much attention to it because they're not in the news constantly, like I'm sure your listeners are.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say that. I think a lot of people, they don't want to be bothered with government. They don't want to be bothered with these conversations. They just want to live and enjoy their lives and do what they do normally with their family, with their friends, and just enjoy themselves. I don't think they want to bog down their lives listening to this. But we have gotten to a point, at least from my perspective in America, where unfortunately you have to pay attention because things are changing so rapidly. And there is a lot of radical ideas being proposed that have to be stopped. Otherwise, America takes a turn in a direction that would be very unfamiliar to anybody that has been here and would be devastating and probably the end of the experiment as we know it. So, but I was good. I like you through the oligarchs in there and everything. You remember a lot from high school one way or the other. I don't know if you've recently freshened up, but yeah, it was all there. I read it in high school myself, and about 2 or 3 months ago, I picked it back up and I browsed through it just to rejog my memory. And I remembered in high school, it scared me. And then as an adult, I was like, my God, it's even worse than when I was young. And I said, I'm even more worried now than I was then. So every time somebody brings that reference up, I do tend to get a little bit nervous, like, oh, please, man, we can't be going in that direction. That will not be anything good coming out of that. Mm-hmm. On your podcast, do you ever feature, or on your blogs, do you ever feature anybody on purpose, knowing that their political affiliation or their views differ from yours, to have a like recorded debate peacefully? So that way, almost like you're showing to people, this is how it could be done. Have you ever tried that on yours?
So I've never tried.
The only reason I'm asking is I haven't listened to all of yours. You have quite a few episodes. I see you're around 200 episodes or so. So it would take a long time to go through everything, but, just out of curiosity, if you ever attempted to go that route or not. Mm-hmm.
No, I've never tried a debate. I have talked to people who probably have differing political beliefs or different beliefs than me, in decent ways. I mean, most people, I would say we agree on a good portion of things that I talk to, just because I find people who Twitter feeds me in the algorithm. So generally it's people who I have something in common with. But that said, I think that I'd be open to having debates if there are people who wanted to, but I haven't necessarily had anyone ask about that. And I've thought about having more roundtables and everything, but the other problem with it is I don't want it to become a sort of cable news thing where you have the Republican talking head and the Democrat talking head and they get angry and talk over each other. I'd almost rather have a conversation with someone on either side for 30, 45 minutes and hear all that they have to say and then let people decide for themselves. I like kind of that longer form interview, like with Dave Rubin, what he does, where he lets people talk. And I when I listen to like a Sam Harris interview with him, I'm like, gosh, he's wrong about this. He's wrong. I would answer that this way. But I do actually hear him out because there isn't someone on the other end shutting him down and stopping him talking. So I like
that. Over him.
Yeah, I like that idea, because then I actually get to hear what he has to say. And when I hear one of the more prominent atheists hear like what they have to say, I think, huh, he didn't really knock down my faith. So it can't be that great of an argument necessarily.
Yeah. And I think the point is, like me and you were talking about, you don't shut them down immediately and you don't yell and scream. And I know that, like you said, on the cable TV news, that's a constant. It's like they put them on there for ratings. They war with each other out. One side's cheering one way, the other side's cheering the other way. And then they're just hoping to get a big rise out of it. Whereas where I'm trying to go, and I can tell by the way you're trying to do the same thing, is that it's more of an open discussion. I do want to hear what you have to say, regardless of whether I agree with you or not. I'd rather hear what you have to say peacefully. And then maybe, like I said, find some common ground, or if not, we just shake hands and agree to disagree and walk away, but build a friendship on that, because it's not impossible to be friends with somebody on the opposite side of the aisle. It just, may take a little bit of work. There may be some subjects you just know to stay away from.
Yeah, especially nowadays when everything's so politicized. You can't talk about, you know, the NFL like you used to be able to without politicizing it or whatever. You used to have some areas that were just apolitical, actually, and now that's not the case.
No, I mean, when I see things happening, like, was it Gina Carano or Carano? I don't know how to say her last name. Yeah, that Disney decided just from her political views to get rid of her off of a TV program. Yeah, I mean, she's entitled to her views. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessary that we cancel somebody. Everybody, in my opinion, says something wrong at some point, one way or the other, whether you're upset, happy, you just have a bad moment, maybe you're intoxicated. Something bad will come out here or there, and I think it happens to everybody at some point. It doesn't mean that it's offensive. Whatever she said was about the Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as offensive myself. It was more factual. Almost the tweet to me looked like she was calling for a little bit more unity and like trying to wake people up, but that's just my perception of it. Mm-hmm. But when you get to a point where people are being canceled like that, trying to open up dialogue like we're trying to do, I think is the only way that we end up surviving long term. Mm-hmm. I don't see us, because the more we divide, I mean, you've heard, I'm sure, during the election, people talking about seceding from the union and everything. I know California did in 2016. Texas is very big on it right now that they want to secede. I mean, we're at a dangerous time in America where I think cooler heads and better conversation will prevail, as opposed to just hating each other and yelling and screaming and just saying, I'm staying on my side of the room and you're staying on yours.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't think that's the thing is when you look at the violence that's happened, I don't think that we're at the point where we're going to be in a civil war situation, because I don't think there's the will for it. I think we're all very comfortable people right now, and people don't want that kind of thing. But I also don't think the vitriol that we have either. And I think we need to cool it down a little bit for sure. But
yeah, civil war, I think ultimately if people understand civil war, that is the destruction of the country. Mm-hmm. That's not going to end correctly. I mean, civil war is not going to be off in some distant battlefield. Mm-hmm. This will be neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block, city by city, state by state. You're going to have inner fighting. This isn't going to be we're all marching to one particular field mm-hmm. and somebody wins and calls it a day. So yeah, I don't think anybody's thirsty for that. Yeah, I don't think anybody's thirsty for that. I think we all just want things to calm down, go back to the way that they may have been, or at least calm down enough where you can go about your life without the constant worry about politically what's going on in society.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I think that's yeah. what I want.
Well, I know I'm trying to work that way myself.
Yeah,
but. Nick, now you do review a lot of books. So my last question for you that I'd have is, do you plan or do you have any plans in the future on writing a book? Because with as much reviewing and reading as you seem to do, I would assume there might be a little bit of interest there that you potentially might want to write something.
Yep. Yeah. So I actually did publish one this January on property rights in the digital age. It's basically a discussion of why property rights are a right that we have. I start there, talk through some of the institutions and the technology that has come up over the different early law codes, different technology that's allowed us to transact like money, and different ways of storing property, right, over the years. And then I take it to today and say, okay, we're undergoing a big change with the digital revolution. How can we learn from what happened in the Industrial Revolution to see the changes that were happening more quickly than ever, right? How do we learn from what they did wrong and where their economy was tending to say, okay, here's where our economy is moving. How do we preserve our right to own property? And maybe even expand that to, because I think that our right to own property has been infringed upon a little too much. And so I think there are technologies like cryptocurrency and other things like that, some trends that I see there for kind of the solopreneur to come back, to have small entrepreneurship and owning your own livelihood in a new way. And so that's what I talked through. It's a short read, like around 80 to 100 pages, something like that, in paperback. It's on. Okay. It's available on Amazon.
Yeah, but on Amazon as well. Is it digital as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's Amazon and paperback or on Kindle.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if anybody wanted to reach out to you, your website and everything, why don't you go ahead and leave that? That way you can plug for yourself in case anybody would like to get a hold of you.
For sure. Yeah. It's conversationofourgeneration.com to see everything that I have going on. I have a YouTube channel, or which you can find just by searching Conversation of Our Generation. I'm pretty much everywhere where you listen to podcasts. If you go to where you listen to podcasts and don't see me there, let me know on my contact form and I'll figure out how to get on there. But I think it's everywhere. And you can find me on Twitter at Con of Our Gen, and Facebook. I'm there as well. I'm on Parler as long as it's back up, and other places. I'm on Minds. I'm pretty much on a bunch of social media platforms, but I'm active on Twitter. So find me on Twitter at Con of Our Gen. It's the best place to interact with me and get discussions going.
All right, perfect, man. Nick, I appreciate you coming on. We'll have to have you again.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it, and keep up the good work that you're doing.
That was fun. Good conversation. That was Nick Jamel. Once again, Conversation of Our Generation podcast. Check them out. And that'll about do it for me today. I am proud to say, if you'd like to reach out to me, you can get me on Gmail at ljconsercrn@gmail.com. And Parler, the free speech app, is back up. So you can follow me there at Joe Little. I'm still at Twitter for the time being until we get everything rolling at least 100% at ljconsercrn. I'm on Clout Hub at Little Joe CC. I'm also on Gab at Little Joe's Corner. God bless and have a good day.